Welcome to Garden DC, a podcast of Washington Gardener magazine all about gardening in the greater Washington, D.C. and Mid-Atlantic area. Your host is Kathy Gents, editor of Washington Gardener magazine. This episode, I'm joined by Doug Oster. Hey, Doug.
Hey, how you doing? I am Doug Oster from Gardening with Doug at DougOster.com. Plug, plug, plug. sitting in my unheated greenhouse looking at lettuce and kale and one early girl tomato plant I bought to stick in here because it's a cheater. I want to have an early tomato, and I've got all sorts of other stuff in here. It's wonderful. The sun is shining today, and in about an hour, it'll be about 90 degrees in here.
Yay! And that's not cheating, Doug. That's just thinking ahead.
Oh, I'm glad you because our friend Jessica Walliser, she always tells me I'm cheating. So
yeah,
I'm glad I'm not.
My definition of cheating is going to the garden center and picking out the tomato plants that already have fruit on them and then planting them.
Okay, I'm cheating then because I do that too.
Oh yeah. That's why I see that in my community garden. I'm like, hey, that's cheating.
I always think there's no crying in baseball, no cheating in gardening.
Exactly. So you said DougOster.com. Could you spell that for our listeners?
DougOster.
Yay. All right. So Doug, you are based in the Pittsburgh area. So you are zone 6.
Yeah, they call us zone 6, but I kind of think more 5A, 5B. Mm-hmm. I don't like to put zone 6 plants in because I've been burned. We had polar vortex, I think it was about 10 years ago, really cold weather, and, you know, ivy that had been growing in our area for 100 years took a beating. So I'm trying to keep it. When I think of perennials, I'm thinking zone 5.
Okay. And then that obviously varies from down in the valley and the city to sure. The hillsides. Yep.
Sure. I'm about 7 miles north of the city, so I probably get a little bit of that. And like you said, yeah, whether you're in the valley, up on a mountain, you know, mm-hmm. It's the topography in Pittsburgh makes it so just coming up with one zone for our area is hard to do.
Yeah, that's really tough. And Pennsylvania as a state as a whole is so variable. And, you know, I don't envy you Pennsylvania garden communicators having to cover such a large state and region.
Well, the one thing about Pittsburgh area is so many people garden, you know, whether it's just, you know, 6 plants on the side of your garage, 6 tomato plants or 4 acres, you know, just about everybody has something growing. And it's fun to talk to them, to hear all their stories and see what they're doing. You know how it is. You learn a lot from the people that you cover. You learn a lot from mm-hmm. how they garden. And that's the part I love about it. In all the years I've been doing this, it's probably 99% positive as far as all the feedback and stuff. You know, even when you get onto social media and everything, gardeners are just, they're nice people. They're like campers. They're like mm-hmm. fishermen. They're like fishermen, only they share their secrets.
Oh, I didn't know fishermen were so secretive.
Oh, yes, we are. Yeah. I mean, yes, they
are. But yeah, I find that too. Gardeners are some of the best people on the planet, not only for sharing knowledge, but for sharing seedlings and seeds. And you mentioned, we had like texted a bit before this phone call, that you have some tomato seeds that you're looking to get rid of.
Yeah, you know, this is one of these things that I love to get these projects going. And so the backstory is I have a gardening friend. He passed away a couple years ago, but we had known each other for a long, long time. And every time I was going through his town, I would give him a call and I'd stop by there. He told me about his friend that had found a tomato while crossing a battlefield during World War II. And yeah, his whole unit was crossing this field. It was a giant field of these tomatoes, and they started all eating them. You know, they were just like, this is amazing. And he stashed a few of those seeds in his pocket because he thought this tomato was a huge one and super tasty. Brought it back to the States, you know, started growing it out. And I have to remind people that these aren't the same seeds from 1945. Don't laugh.
Yes.
We take that for granted, Kathy, but mm-hmm. it's they grew it every year and saved the seeds every year. And
so, correct. Yeah.
He told me about this tomato and I just thought, what a wonderful story. And then he, with his friend Joe, my friend's name is Dan, and with his friend Joe, they came up with the name 3945, which were the years of the war. And so it's just called the 3945 tomato. I give them away to anybody who is interested in them. You go to that DougGoster.com and just look for the address. Send me a self-addressed stamped envelope. We want to get it going pretty quick here. Every day I'm sending out about 100 packets of seed to people so they can get their seeds started. But then the whole part of the project is that grow it out and save me some seeds and send them back. And all the instructions on how to start the seeds and how to save the seeds are sent with them when I send them to you. And it's a fun project to keep going because I didn't want this tomato to die out. And when Dan passed away, that might have been it. But 3945 mm-hmm. now is growing all over the place. And I have seed left over from our local home and garden show here that I'm going to throw that seed in too. It's called Clint Eastwood Rowdy Red Tomato Seed. And I want to ask you, where do you think that rowdy name comes from? You're too young to know, but trying.
Rowdy? Yep. No. So Clint Eastwood Rowdy Red. Yep. Is that a horse name?
No, you're too young. His first character on TV was in a show called Rawhide.
Oh.
And his character was called Rowdy Yates. And now when I was speaking to my group at the home show, they're more my age. I just turned 60. So anybody who guessed it right, I made them sing the Rawhide theme. So you ever heard the Rawhide theme? Blues Brothers.
I think I'm familiar. Yeah. From the Blues Brothers movies. Yeah.
Rolling, keep the going. Got it.
It's definitely a song that sticks with you.
Oh yeah.
So that's a long tomato name, but I was going to ask if you could describe both tomatoes as far as looks, taste, determinate, indeterminate.
So both of them are indeterminate, means they're just going to grow. They both need a big cage, especially the 3945. It has huge tomatoes, 1 to 2 pound tomatoes. They're kind of an orangish red. They're meaty and they have that old fashioned flavor. Now the Clint Eastwood tomato is an interesting one because I got that from a friend of mine. He runs a company called Tomato Fest in Carmel, California. He's 75. He grows 640 different types of heirloom tomatoes or not just heirloom, but he sells the seed. And we've become friends. I did a story on him last year and I said, I need a tomato to give away at the Home and Garden Show, but I want it to have a great story. And that's what the Clint Eastwood, you know, Rowdy Red, the whole bit. But he named it after Clint because Clint was mayor of Carmel and helped him with his tomato festival. And a breeder had this tomato that had this very intense, complex, robust flavor. It's a smaller tomato, 6 ounce tomato, but it's grown for its flavor. And whenever somebody's going to use a Clint Eastwood to name something, it's got to be good. I grow a daffodil called Sir Winston Churchill. When you're going to put a name like that on a plant, it's got to be good. And so both are big growing tomatoes. One is 1 to 2 pounds, a 3945 with old-fashioned flavor. The other one is a smaller tomato, but the vines will grow big and just super tasty. And I've got lots of seeds left over, so I will throw one pack of each in every self-addressed stamped envelope with instructions. And you can go to town with it and you'll grow something different. I love to have a story in the garden. You know, with something like a 3945, I spoke to a high school group, a yearbook group, and trying to help them with their yearbook photography. And I wondered if any of them would know if I started talking about this tomato and called it 3945. If they would have any idea if it related to the war. And one of the students, you know, raised their hand and said, that's got to be World War II. And I was very excited to know that they knew a little bit of their history. And so having a great story when you're picking a tomato, when you have somebody over, you know, your Clint Eastwood tomato. I always say about that one, I always kind of do my really bad Clint Eastwood imitation and say, go ahead, make my salad. So I can get a laugh out of that. It's not a great You got to have the visuals, you know.
Exactly. The squint has to be there.
I'm squinting and holding my hand out like a gun.
So let's keep on talking about tomatoes because I cannot wait for summer and my own fresh tomatoes from the garden. Besides those two wonderful seeds you're giving away, what are your favorites to grow for yourself?
There's too many to talk about, but we'll start with the early ones. You know, I always am with an unheated greenhouse in our climate. I'm getting tomato seeds started right now, and I've got a whole bunch of early tomato seeds, like 4th of July. And I did a test for early tomatoes, and I bought like 200 packets of different early tomatoes, everything I could find. And the winner was Early Girl, which is like, you know, I never expected that. I thought it'd be some weird one. So Early Girl is my probably my number one early tomato. But 4th of July, Early Girl, there's one called Moskvich that I grow as an early one. Stupici, which is just Stupice. Stupici is a great early tomato.
So I pronounced that stupice, but I guess I've been wrong all this time.
There is no wrong. When it comes to saying the names of plants, there is no wrong. And I try to tell that to people who know a lot more than me, because I interviewed a woman from Ohio State University whose job is to pronounce different plants. I thought it would be, you know, this would be an interesting story. And she told me, she goes, there is no official pronunciation. So you say clematis, I say clematis. Now, so stupice is fine. Stupici, everyone says it differently. And so those are my early favorites. Then for, you know, there's another one I give away called Limbaugh Legacy Potato Top. And again, it's a Pittsburgh heirloom. Mr. Limbaugh called me one day at the office and said, I just want to tell you I grow this tomato. It's the best tomato you've ever tasted. And I'm just like, sir, I hear that a couple times a year, blah, blah, blah. Well, he convinced me to come out. And again, I grow hundreds of tomato plants in my greenhouse, but when he showed me the ones he had in his cold frame, I was blown away. Deep green stems as thick as my thumb. And I tried them out, and that was my first tomato project where this Pittsburgh heirloom, and he just called it potato top. It's just an old-fashioned, big, ugly, meaty tomato. Last one you'll pick of the season. And I just love it. And that's one actually that, like, if you wanted to buy the seeds, you would go to Tomato Fest. He has that. He's the only one that has that variety.
And is that tomatofest.com?
I think it is. Yeah,
Okay.
tomato.com. And so the thing about growing tomatoes, what I'm trying to get to, is that there's early, mid-season, and late-season varieties. And so the early ones I've talked about, that late-season one would be a Brandywine or a Limbaugh Legacy. But there's a couple mid-seasons that I love. Oh, another early one I forgot to talk about is Sun Gold.
Oh, yes.
Sun
That's
Gold
my
is
favorite.
my wife's favorite tomato. It's a very important one in the garden for us because it puts on tomatoes so quick. And so mid-season, there's one called Eva Purple Ball that I love. I love Cherokee Purple. I love Japanese Black Trifoli. You just can't go wrong, to tell you the truth. If you just start looking at tomatoes, and I know it's overwhelming when you look in a catalog and see 150 different types of tomatoes, but just pick a few and see what you think. I get asked a lot, like, what should I grow? And I'm growing a lot of these plants for sentimental reasons. Eva Purple Ball is one that a gardening friend, geez, 30 years ago, turned me onto. Limbaugh Legacy is because Mr. Limbaugh turned me onto that tomato. I still grow out 400 plants for his family. Mr. Limbaugh was a streetcar conductor, and he would give those plants away to anybody who had interest in gardening. And so part of my with that tomato, part of what I do, I want to give away as many as I can to keep it going. And so the Sun Gold is my wife's favorite. I grow one called Matt's Wild Cherry. My son's name is Matt. So a lot of times these plants, they don't have like the, you know, certainly some of them are just like, oh, it's an outstanding tomato, blah, blah, blah. But there's just sometimes just a name will be enough for me to plant it. And you start to get your favorites, and you try a couple others every year and see if you love them or don't love them. And it's just a load of fun, but they need to be started now if you're going to start from seed. And you know how easy that is. You know, anybody can get a seed to sprout. It's just growing it on. And that just means some kind of light. You know, in my case, it's this unheated greenhouse. For you, it might be just an LED light over the plants to get them to grow strong and stocky. And anybody can do this. And we all grow from seed because we want to grow something different. When we started gardening, we're just happy that we didn't kill it. You know, it survived.
Exactly.
It survived. I didn't kill it. Now the next thing is I want to grow something that the next door neighbor is not growing. And that's a 3945 tomato, a Clint Eastwood Rowdy Red, a Sun Gold, whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm. So I was going to say that, yeah, starting the seeds pretty easy. They're very prolific in germinating. Mm-hmm. But I find a lot of my seed exchange attendees, and when we hold our annual tomato taste in late August at the Silver Spring Farmers Market, that it's the hardening off that is a lot of trouble for people. So it's going from the baby tomato stage, hardening it off, and then planting it outside. Any tips there, Doug?
Yeah, especially for tomatoes. Of all the plants that you grow, tomatoes are probably the most tender when it comes to that transition from inside to out. And it's not quite as bad for greenhouse grown plants because they're getting sun through the glass, but they still need that period, kind of a halfway house in between braving the wilds of being out in the spring. But when you're growing them under lights, like fluorescent or LED, you definitely have to take the time, and it's a pain. There's no way around it. It's a pain, especially when you've got flat after flat of them. But if you got less, it's easier. But still, you're going to have to go out every day. I start off, I give them like 2-3 hours in shade, pure shade in a protected area near the house, bring them back in. And every day I give them a little bit more time outside, a little bit more sun. It has to be done slowly. And if you eliminate this stage, they're going to sit there for 2 weeks and they're going to be sunburned and not move, and you're going to be behind. And so take the time to do that little, about a week to get them toughened up. I stop giving them as much water, as much fertilizer. They need the wind to toughen them up, the cold to toughen them up. And when those plants are nice and tough, and then you throw them in the garden, they're ready to go. We want these tomatoes to go from seed and just boom, 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 keep going. You don't want them to have that 2 weeks of like, I can't do it. Mm-hmm. It's too wet. It's too sunny. Why didn't you get me ready for this?
So it's like getting them prepped, getting them ready. So I was going to say, I have a few tomatoes that actually self-sow for me out in my community garden plot. One of them is Matt's Wild Cherry, and the Sun Gold is the other one. Have you let any of yours go to seed?
Yeah, most of the time I'm planting what we call compost surprise. And so something will sprout basically out of the compost pile. And if I've got room, I'll throw it in a container, throw it somewhere else. And the thing about that is, like, when that's sprouting from your Sun Gold, it's now become, it's reverted to a parent of Sun Gold. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to be similar, but it's not exactly the same. When you get them out of the compost pile, you don't know what it's going to be. One year I had one, it was the perfect tomato for me. It was a saladette size, so maybe 3 ounces, round and super acidic. The next year though, I saved those seeds and planted, and I got a big kind of mediocre slicer, So it hadn't stabilized. It was reverting to a parent and then reverting to something else. But it's a lot of fun to see what you're going to get. But I never got that great tomato back. But the other thing about tomatoes that I talk a lot about is beating the virus, beating the fungal diseases, early blight and septoria leaf spot. And so taking a plant like a Sun Gold, 47 days from transplant. Yes, we're putting them in early here in our climate, around the third week of May, maybe a little later. But I'm planting those later also, like in the greenhouse, and planting seeds later. And I'm planting a Sun Gold, an Early Girl, and other early varieties as late as July 4th because they love warm soil and they love warm air temperatures, and they'll catch up. You can see through the years and what I've done with tomatoes that, yes, the May 20th planting, I might get the first tomato. But if we have a real wet, cold year like we did last year, they won't kill up, that early blight and septoria leaf spot won't kill them, but it'll slow them down. And if I plant June 15 and June 30th and July 4th, those plants by the end of the season, regardless of how wet and cold it is, because it's not going to be that cold in July and later, they always do better as far as fungal diseases. And so not planting everything on one day don't put all your eggs in one basket. I know it's easy to get the garden in. We're all going out. We're going to weed. We're going to put everything in Memorial Day like Mom used to with us. And Labor Day, it's all coming out. If you mix it up a little bit on all your plants, not just tomatoes, some this week, some that week, plant some seeds a little later, you're having much better results as far as when you plant them all in one day, you're just assuming that the weather, the pests and diseases are all going to be on your side. And as longtime gardeners, you know, that's just not usually the way it works. So succession planting is a big part of what I'm doing.
And you're doing pretty large numbers. So if you're just, you know, Joe Schmo homeowner, and you're starting out with one Sun Gold and one pot, you know, that could obviously go out Memorial Day weekend, as you say. But, you know, it's always fun to experiment and add more. But I want to get back to the fungal disease issues just a little bit, even though that's the depressing part, and talk about, we always advise people to try to rotate their tomato plantings into a different spot in your garden. But that's tough, especially for people who have small spaces to garden in. There's only so much sun, and it's got to be in full sun. So what are your other tips for trying to beat back some of those fungal disease issues?
Well, I cannot. I'm in one of those gardens where I can't rotate my tomatoes. There's only one spot for them. And so those fungal spores are always going to be there. It's probably going to be worse for me because I am in the same spot. But what I'm doing is I'm what they call a no-till gardener. So the first thing is to put a nice layer of compost on top. That's kind of going to beat down the spores a little bit. When I'm planting, I'm mulching right away, and that might be counterintuitive to heating up the soil, but it's better in my opinion because, it's slowing down those spores from splashing up. I'm removing bottom leaves to try and get more distance between those spores and the plant itself, the leaves, because what happens is the spore splashes up, it gets on the bottom of the leaves. If the leaves are wet for 24 hours or longer, that those spores enter the plant system. About a month later, we see it start to manifest itself in those brown and yellow leaves on the bottom that work their way up. So if we can try and keep those spores down in the ground. And then there's our organic fungicides too. There was one, it was called Serenade. It's been discontinued. I think the new version is called Natria maybe. But an organic fungicide, don't reach for one with chemicals because it can be nasty. But an organic fungicide is best used before you see signs of damage. And so if your tomatoes are in the third week of May and you're getting 50 degrees at night and cold rain for 3 days, it makes sense to apply an organic fungicide. The organic fungicide, it attacks the actual fungal spores and stops them from reproducing.
Yeah, that's great tips. And I like to, you know, my approach is very simple. I just pick off any leaf that I start to see a spot or blight on. And then, of course, dispose of that, not in your compost pile. That would be the worst thing to do, but to just get that out of there and put that in with your trash pickup.
Yeah, bury or burn it, but don't put
definitely
it in the compost
not.
Pile.
And so the next thing that I was going to say about tomatoes that I get lots of questions about are, we talked about when to plant. So we're talking late May, early June, when the ground has warmed up, not necessarily the temperature outside, but when the soil is warm enough for it. But then how you plant it, because a lot of people will do the lay down method. Do you do that, Doug?
I use a lot of the horizontal planting method, and I get a lot of odd looks and comments when I post about it. And it really works, especially, you know, when you're growing your own tomatoes, there's going to be some that are going to be kind of long and stretchy and leggy. That's just the way it is. This unheated greenhouse, as soon as the oak tree that's above it leaves out, everything starts stretching because it's not getting the sun it wants. And so especially for one that's become kind of long and leggy, stripping off those bottom leaves, having a shallow trench, and I always put compost in that shallow trench, and turning that plant sideways, covering it up. If you're staking, stake it right away, because otherwise you're not going to know where that stem is, and you'll put a stake right through it, because I've had friends do that, where they put it in a week later, they go, oh, I gotta put my stake in, and they cut right through their stem, and that's not a good thing for the plant.
And that staking and putting that label there. That's the other mistake made 1 year is I put all the stakes in, nice row of plants, and then I looked down at my little pile of labels and I was like, yikes.
Let me tell you a little bit about that, Kathy. This is how you know you've gone too far with gardening, because I had a day where I had picked a bunch of tomatoes, and I like them refrigerated. I know that's a never refrigerate your tomatoes, but that's just the way I love them. And so I had them in a big bowl in the refrigerator, and without any other information, I was able to ID the 10 different tomatoes just by their shape and size. And I was thinking to myself, boy, this has gone too far. You shouldn't be able to do that. That's crazy. But that first tomato of the year, and for me, it's usually mm-hmm. Sun Gold or Early Girl, and I'm doing things where a lot of times I don't like to talk about it because I don't want people to put their whole crop out early. But I've learned from growers, professional growers here, that will put a few plants out early, use protection like plastic or floating row cover or a cold frame, whatever it might be, again, as an attempt to try and get them sooner. That's not your whole crop. You could lose your whole crop if you put it in too early. But when you're starting from seed, that's part of the fun of experimenting. If you got two or three plants that, again, are early varieties, like, well, you know what? I've got a plan. First for me, it's warming up the soil. So putting black landscape fabric on, then, good compost, it's black, putting the plant in, covering it right away, making a little greenhouse outdoors. And if you have a mild spring, a lot of times those tomatoes will give you the first tomato of the year, and you can gloat and brag. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just all your gardening friends are going to say, I'm picking today. And they're going to say, I hate you. But that's okay.
And you can brag on Instagram and social media too.
Oh, yeah.
That's the thing today. So I was going to say, I had for years a community garden plot neighbor, an older Italian gentleman, very old school, and his entire plot, 10 by 20, was rows of tomato plants, always just the San Marzano with eggplants in between. And he would plant them out what I thought was way too early, about, early to mid-April. But he had the most wonderful tomatoes and eggplants of our entire community garden.
That's awesome. Part of it is just the experimentation of part of gardening is trying to grow figs when you shouldn't be able to, trying to get tomatoes in earlier than mm-hmm. you should, try to pick tomatoes later than you should. There's all these things that we do as gardeners to try and extend the season and grow things that we love. And again, that's just one of the beauties of gardening. And right now, what we're going through, the garden is just such a wonderful place to be in, because no matter what's going on around us, the daffodils are sprouting, the crocuses are coming up. It's just comforting to be in the garden. Yeah. At least it is.
So true. And so one last tomato question I was going to ask you is, they're always described as heavy feeders. And I personally just throw a cap full of fish fertilizer in with the water when I'm watering them. Usually I will wait 2 to 3 weeks after they're planted to start that regime. What do you do for yours?
For the most part, it's just they're living off compost. Mm-hmm. I do use, I like this organic liquid concentrate called Grow from Espoma. It's easy to find. It's inexpensive. And yeah, you throw a couple tablespoons into your watering can, and it gives them a little bit of a boost. It depends on what I can find early in the season. Locally here, there's a place that has a organic granular fertilizer. It's basically dehydrated chicken manure, and it's a 3-4-3, which if I can get it, I'll throw that into the planting hole. I'll use the Grow if I can get that. Tomato Tone from Espoma is another great granular, just to have mm-hmm. it in there, and the plant will use it up during the season. But 90% of what they're feeding it on is the compost. I'm obsessed with using compost. I feel that it's the building block of gardens, and it gives you the green thumb. You know, there's no such thing as a black thumb, and tomatoes are pretty easy to grow. As I said, succession planting is going to help you a lot. But yeah, giving them a good base of compost is going to give them everything they need. When they have everything they need, they're basically going to outgrow most of the problem.
Yeah. Yeah. Strong plant is obviously in a much better spot to fight off a lot of those fungal issues and our heat and humidity. So I was going to say for our last talk about tomatoes, our last point was last summer, I don't know for Pittsburgh, but for definitely for DC, we had a record number of 90 degree days and just no cooling off at night. So that caused all of our tomatoes to slow down to basically nothing as far as production. How was it for you in Pittsburgh?
We actually had the wettest year ever, and so that did not help the tomatoes. A very tough year for tomatoes as far as that is concerned, because again, they're just prone to fungal diseases. And with a year like we had, there's no way you're going to prevent all the fungal diseases. You know, for the hot weather, especially in DC there, again, my suggestion would be lots of different tomatoes, because a lot of the older, like those, that big one, like Limbaugh Legacy and Brandywine, those will just drop their blossoms in 90 degrees. But there are some other ones that can fight off those hot temperatures and still put a fruit on. You know, because they're self-pollinated, they still need something to go to the flower, and you know, like a little bee will go on there and buzz it, and then the male female parts will be together. A lot of times shaking that plant, brushing that plant when things get hot can help it set fruit.
Yeah, and I find that the cherry tomatoes especially are obviously more prolific in the heat, and since right. they're a little quicker and they're not as susceptible to just sitting there. And it's so heartbreaking when you have that one Cherokee purple on the vine waiting and waiting for it to get ready. So I was just going to say for our Washington Gardener magazine readers that we have our tomato taste that we do at the Silver Spring Farmers Market always late August. And I would say our top three inevitably every year are Green Zebra, Cherokee Purple, and the Sun Gold or Sun Sugar. Those are usually up there in the top 3 to 5.
You know, those are great ones, you know, and again, it's about your taste. You know, for me, Sun Gold has a little bit more tomato in it than Sun Sugar, mm-hmm. but for other people, they love the sweetness of Sun Sugar. Sun Sugar too, it doesn't split as much as Sun Gold, but again, sometimes you fall in love with a tomato and you can't get away from it. And that's what it is for me for Sun Gold. I've had Sun Sugars. I've had some other ones too, but I don't know. You know how it is. You fall in love with something and you just got
to
grow it.
And so you like to eat your tomatoes, you said, cold from the fridge. And mine usually don't leave the garden plot. I just eat them right there off the vine. Do you have any favorite tomato recipes?
Yeah, this is a complicated recipe, but it's the best way to eat tomatoes. It's 2 pieces of white bread, some mayonnaise, a giant slice, put them together and go to heaven.
that sounds really good right now towards the end of March. So that's something to dream about for this summertime. So thank you so much, Doug, for talking tomatoes with me today. And let's say your website again and spell it for us.
It is DougOster.com, DougOster. And before I go, I got to tell people that, Kathy, what you're doing is phenomenal. I read your tips. I read your social media. I push it along. And I just think what you're doing is absolutely wonderful. And I just wanted people to know that. And I'm happy to be your friend. You know, we've been connected online for a long time, and we get to see each other maybe once a year in person, sometimes twice a year in person. But when we do, it's good times.
Thank you so much, Doug, and right back at you. Plant profile, heuchera. Whether you pronounce it heuchera or heuchera or heuchera, this terrific perennial species with the common names of coral bells or alum root has seen an explosion of new introductions in the last decade or so.
Heuchera are native to North America and do well in woodland garden beds, rock gardens, containers, borders, and as ground covers. They are drought tolerant and prefer soil to be a little more alkaline than acidic. If you have heavy clay soil, then it is necessary to add some lighter gardening soil when transplanting them into the ground. To get more plants, carefully dig and divide the clumps in early spring. Make sure that each piece you replant has some good roots attached. For those gardening where there are hot and humid summers, select those with Heuchera villosa in the lineage. H. villosa is a species native to the southern Appalachian Mountains. Villosa means hairy leaf, and those fine hairs not only make it heat tolerant, but also deer resistant. The hybrids that have been developed in recent years have an extensive array of colors, shapes, foliage types, and blossom sizes. Heucheras will bloom from early June until the end of summer, but the foliage is the most eye-catching aspect of these perennials. Most varieties do best in part shade with some morning sun, but there are recent introductions that flourish from full sun to full shade. Heucheras have also been hybridized with another native shade perennial called Tiarella to produce the Heucherella, which has added even more fantastic colors and textures to this extraordinary line of perennials. Some of my favorite Heuchera cultivars include Midnight Rose, Silver Gumdrop, Plum Cascade, Berry Smoothie, and Lime Ricky. Try a Heuchera in your garden today. You can grow that. You can find Washington Gardener online at washingtongardener.com, on Twitter at WDC Gardener, on Instagram at WDC Gardener, and on Facebook.com at Washington Gardener Magazine.